Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
Welcome, Anna. We're thrilled to have you here. Can you please introduce yourself to our audience and share what you're best known for?
I've been a creative professional for over 20 years. I guess, you know, it's really tough to say like what I'm best known for, I guess, like, because it's been, I've done lots of things. I've done a lot of, you know, really interesting projects for, you know, brands like General Motors and, you know, a lot of, you know, automotive companies, as well as the fashion industry. I would say that the most impactful work that I've done is probably at Deloitte, just because it was kind of where I really began to hone in on sort of that, you know, understanding of the customer, understanding of the, you know, of the client, and also then applying a lot of my ideation, my art direction roots to that. So I would say that that was quite impactful.
Amazing. What an interesting career. It sort of spanned really so many different industries. So my next question is, how important is it for a brand to build emotional connections when creating brand assets?
I think we're living in an era where customer acquisition is just increasingly challenging, and it's vital for brands to really go beyond promises and really deliver value by building that emotional connection. We need to tell a lot of stories in order for our brands to believe in what we're bringing to them. Stories really not only help us build that emotional connection, but they also really keep our customer engaged and they keep our customer loyal. And those customers who really do feel emotionally connected to the brand, they really become advocates and, you know, they really enthusiastically recommend brands. And that's really positive and that's really, really powerful as well. I think that also, you know, standing out in a world of sameness, like data has created a sense of, you know, we're doing a lot of the same tactics over and over again, following those same strategies over and over again, I would say, doesn't really give us much of a competitive advantage. I also think that we're living in a world where cultural awareness is, you know, highly sensitive. I would say that there's a lot of expectations on brands to be culturally aware. And, you know, we live in a world of cancellation and, you know, a bigger brand stage really just means like, you know, a bigger stage for mistakes. So having that cultural awareness and being authentic is also another way and also another angle in terms of building that emotional connection with our customer.
Amazing. Thank you. And I think that sort of follows nicely into the next question here is brands talk a lot about being authentic and telling their story, but then there's also lots of information about data-driven decision-making. How do you find the sweet spot between the two when they can sometimes be pulling you in different directions?
Honestly, I truly believe that it needs to be held together with a vision. I think a vision really sits at the pinnacle of strategy and all tactics. You need to be authentic as a brand. And that sometimes means making tough decisions when it, you know, really doesn't satisfy your purpose or your vision. And that really ultimately means saying no many times, you know, and capturing an audience has become really complex. Companies are really often under pressure, whether it's, you know, startups or, you know, mature companies around, you know, they're under pressure from investors, from shareholders, and really, you know, strengthening their balance sheet. And they really often find themselves deprioritizing brand investments. And, you know, because those impacts are not usually immediately evident for near-term sales growth. And so you know, we have so many building blocks that really help capture the attention of our audience, but really figuring out what the right message is at the right time is really difficult to do. We really need to get creative about how we action the data. I think it's just not so black and white. We really need to look at the data. I've often looked at data and it's sparked ideas, or it's really just been one of those like aha moments where I'm like, oh my God, like how could we not have seen this, you know? Also, you know, teams are very siloed. I've worked in consultancies and advertising agencies in-house, and it's really difficult to deliver work with a big picture in mind, you know, with a lot of these siloed teams. But it's really important to kind of work cross-functionally with team members as much as you can to really understand what is happening at various stages of the purchase funnel or, you know, of whatever the journey may be. I think it just, you know, bottom line is use a vision that helps to kind of guide everyone on the team to kind of work towards one common goal. And that will, you know, essentially help, you know, pull everything together rather than everybody going off. It becomes that sort of source of truth.
You know, and then on a personal note, how do you keep your cool when brand vibes clash with the hard data? Like when your gut says one thing, but the data is saying something completely different. How do you balance those two without losing your mind?
Sure, there are moments where, you know, you're getting get a bit flushed and you're just like, I don't know, like how to, you know, prove this point. And, you know, I think an interesting way that I tend to look at it is brand often looks to the future and data will look at the past. So, you know, data captured is a result of something that's already happened, right? So the brand really sets the tone and it really introduces something new, something fresh. And it really keeps that connection and, you know, the connection with the customer keeps it alive. But also remembering that the data that was captured was either from yesterday, last week, last month, right? If you're capturing sometimes qualitative data on a new concept and you're, you know, that person who's maybe testing a product, they may not understand how it works. So I would say, you know, challenge the data. You know, ask for the source, ask a lot of questions. And, you know, as we learn, like we grow and, you know, it's something new and it eventually becomes like something comfortable. So that's sort of how I kind of look at, you know, balancing that out and keeping cool. And a lot of times that does resonate, I would say, with, you know, with other leaders or on a team, because, you know, they just stop and think, or they're like, oh yeah, right, this is kind of, you know, maybe something new and novel, and we need to kind of set the groundwork for that.
What a great way to think about it, the sort of idea of brand looking forward and data looking backwards. What's your take on the current approach to decision making in product design?
In product design, you need to constantly be flying at two elevations. I think number one is you need to be at the strategic level. So really understanding like the long-term impact of what you're doing and how those features overall deliver on the big brand picture, right? So you're not losing a sense of that as you are creating feature after feature after feature. I've been at organizations where, you know, we're just adding more and more and more to like a product display page or something like that. And I'm just like, why are we doing this? You know, like we kind of like time out. Why are we adding more things? You know, if we're, you know, trying to kind of, you know, approach our customer, you know, in a simplistic way, then that's not necessarily like how we should be approaching something. But number two, I think feature improvement is important and we need to be constantly releasing and learning from our releases and iterating on the designs. So I'm not a fan of, you know, rapid changes like based on immediate performance. So it's really difficult to kind of say, you know, what is considered immediate performance? You know, are we talking 2 weeks? Are we talking 2 months? You know, and so like I feel that the length of time that we dedicate to run some experiments, it really depends on what you're testing. Like I said earlier, is if, you know, if it's a new way of navigating or something like that that we want to test, then perhaps it needs a little bit more time for the customer to experience that and then come back to it, you know, over time to kind of get more familiar. So, you know, you may need to ensure that you are looking at multiple sessions to see if there's like an improvement there. I think we also often overlook the adjacent effects of a release. So we may just kind of say like, okay, we're going to release this, and then we just only look at that one thing. We're not looking at the trickle effect of what's happening on either side. You know, we're not really understanding maybe this is negative, but there's positive on other areas of our site experience.
How do you stay ahead of the curve with design while still holding on to the essence of the brand? Is it like walking a tightrope, balancing between pushing boundaries and staying true to your roots?
I'd say that I think benchmarking is super important. It's important to really stay close to others, other competitors, maybe not direct competitors, but other people in your industry to understand like what's going on, how they're responding to environmental changes, you know, and things like that. I often look at, you know, everything from UX, UI design to different styles of photography or fashion styles. But I also really, like, I'm a real fan of looking completely outside of the industry that I'm in. So something that's completely least expected. If I'm doing something for fashion, maybe I'll look at banking. I'm like, I say to myself, like, how would a bank sell, you know, a jewelry product? You know, like, I'll kind of ask myself something like that. And so you then kind of take that inspiration and you sort of shape it into your own. So I think it's really important that, you know, we are looking at those benchmarks, but we're not necessarily just saying, okay, well, this is what this brand is doing. Let's just do the same thing. It's important to kind of shape it into your own. And I think it's also important to look at your personas, like really ensure that you're, number one, your personas are kept up to date. You're not using a persona from like 2 years ago, that you're also, you know, you're looking to that and you're saying, okay, well, you know, like, how does this impact, you know, our user or, you know, our customer? Those are some ways to sort of really stay ahead of the curve.
So when it comes to a brand's messaging, how do you decide what message takes center stage?
I think you should really be true to your mission, you know, and what you plan to deliver to your customer. So always looking at the mission, for example, a performance-based athletic wear brand, right? You know, and their mission may be to, you know, provide a product that helps you perform as a top athlete. So let's just say, you know, if that is your main mission, then all of your messages need to ladder back to that. Regardless of what you're doing, you know, and it doesn't mean like every single like line of copy needs to say, oh, you're a performance athlete. It just means like that the overall feeling, the theme, the emotion that it captures ladders back to that. It really becomes your why. Why should I buy, you know, this shoe over another shoe, is really what your customer is going to ask themselves. And you want to basically arm them to be able to answer that question themselves. So I think when you're thinking about that sort of key message, that's really what we should always keep in the back of our minds.
And that kind of brings us to, you know, impact. And I think that's where, as a world, we kind of really become focused on impact, you know, ESG, DEI, sustainability, those sort of things are all really big right now. How do you make sure you're addressing all of these, but then still really highlighting your USP?
Mm-hmm. We're living in an era of cancellation and, you know, there's such a big brand stage, and this just means that there's a bigger stage for mistakes, right? Companies will make mistakes. They overlook certain cultural awareness and, you know, and then they find themselves in these sort of awkward, you know, situations. I think companies, just modern companies, are operating, you know, in an ethical, inclusive, and responsible way. And this is how we need to operate today. I think it's just important, like, as a foundation, first and foremost, as a business, that we should be operating that way. And then when it comes to sort of building that, you know, if we go back to building that emotional connection, we have to really look at like what is authentic to us. Like, it doesn't mean that just because as a brand, you know, we want to operate with all these like impactful initiatives, it doesn't mean we need to shout them from the, like, you know, from the mountaintops, you know, on every single thing. I think that it's just important that we don't ignore any sort of like cultural nuances, because I think that, you know, we may, you know, brands may face, you know, backlash, or it could, you know, damage their reputation. But I think, like I said, I think the most important thing is really truly being culturally aware and being authentic.
Yeah, consumers are looking for more than sort of a tick box exercise. They're really looking, if you're saying you're sustainable, that you are actually following that throughout your company ethos, all of that, all of your values align in that way. Do you think being a creative leader is tougher than being a regular leader?
Well, of course, yes, but that's very biased. I mean, I haven't been a different kind of leader, so I would say I can only speak to my own experience. But I would say, yes, it's tough for a number of different reasons. I think as an individual, it's like on the introspective side of things. I would say as a creative person, when you're in the room with, you know, many other folks who seem a lot smarter than you, let's be honest, it just seems like everyone's smarter than you. And, you know, I think it's just important to ground yourself in like what you're there for and what you bring to the table. So I would say, you know, there is a bit of, you know, a bit of that happens in terms of like that there could be some like difficulty there. I also think that like a creative individual kind of goes from being like an individual contributor, and they also tend to be measured and validated based on the measure of their output. And so when you become a leader, you're not necessarily measured on your output anymore. And that's a really difficult transition, I would say, into leadership. You now have to then figure out a way to empower and inspire others to do great work. And sometimes within conditions that you cannot control. Like you may be in a situation where, like, you know, there's just so much work being thrown at you, and, you know, you have to figure out, you know, a way to manage that with your team and keep everybody happy and keep everybody motivated. So it's really, it can be really difficult to do. You know, I think it's just important to remember that we all bring something unique and interesting to the table. We all have our specialties. And I think that often what I see is when a creative leader is recognized as valuable, like seeing as, oh my gosh, you know, Anna, she's bringing all these ideas to the table, then all of a sudden you're pulled into everything. So it becomes even harder to do. You're just like, okay, we need Anna in all the meetings. And then on the flip side of that, sometimes I think organizations, they don't know what to do with us. They don't know how to foster creative leaders. They don't know how to actually bring creative leaders in. So yeah, I would say, you know, learning that business acumen, it becomes, you know, part of the job, and you kind of have to dive in. It's scary. I don't know if that's really kind of how it is for other leaders, but I would say that rings true for myself, my own experience.
I think I've definitely experienced the, oh, that was great. And then suddenly you're now in every single meeting, expected to come up with fantastic ideas on the fly. So I completely understand that. We're going to go into my favorite part of these, which is the quick fire. And it's just a bunch of questions where we throw them at you and you kind of just sort of, you know, go with the first thing that comes in your mind. What is something you think is overrated at the moment and something that needs to be talked about more?
Overrated. I think I'm not very good at this, so I'm going to say that out loud. I'm probably going to like end this call, and then I'm going to be flooded with a bunch of ideas. I'm like, oh, damn, I should have said that. I'm going to say that overrated. Anything that really requires like any wild amount of waiting in line, like no thanks. If I see a lineup at like, I'm just like, nope, I'm not doing it. I don't care how much I love that. I'm not going to waste my time there. I think something we need to talk about is education. I think education in this country, in Canada, I feel is outdated. It's impractical. I think, especially in the elementary, high school grades, I think it needs an overhaul, and nobody's doing anything about it. Or as far as I can see, it's, yeah, I think it's something that we definitely need to talk about.
And globally, I think it's, you know, education globally is in need of an overhaul. Cool. How do you think other people would describe your personal aesthetic taste?
I would say like Scandinavian, like hygge. So it's like a Scandi hygge, I would say, which is really around like clean, minimalistic, but with like warm, cozy vibes, I would say. So it's like not all like, you know, gray, black, white, and very cold, because that just does not feel appealing to me. I do dabble in like interior design as well. So I like, I'm really, yeah, this you know, this question really touches my heart. but yeah, I hope that people see that as my aesthetic style, because I think that's, yeah, that's really the type of aesthetics that I love.
That's such a great aesthetic as well. You know, that like I say, comfy minimalism. What makes someone a good travel companion?
I would say for me, okay, wake up early. If I'm traveling with somebody who wants to sleep all day, I'm not going to have a good time with that person. So I'm an early riser, you know, like generally, but when I'm on vacation, I'm an early riser. So that is like very important. I need to get the most out of the day. And then I would say that the other part is like, be willing to walk a lot, because like, I like to kind of enjoy the sights and stop in at a cafe. And I just think that if you're going to be in a car driving around, like you're not going to really get the effect of, you know, the place that you're visiting. So those are, I would say, two main things about being a good travel companion.
What is the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Oh, okay. So I've had a lot of really great little nuggets that I still keep with me today. Like, I've been in this industry for over 20 years, and I've had like creative directors that told me things like early in the days that I still remember to this day. So I would say one that stands out is, you know, I was nervous. I remember at like a meeting, I was going into like a, you know, presentation, you know, earlier on in my career. And my boss told me, as a creative person, you are the highlight of their day. You're going to come in and you're going to razzle dazzle them with all of your ideas. And just remember that when you like walk into the room. And I take that with me. I still think about that to this day. When I get really nervous, I'm like, you know what? I'm the highlight of their day, whether I am or not. I think that was really good advice. And I would say that another one that kind of like stands out to me is, never be typecast for your design style. So like, never have a design style. You should always be like reinventing yourself. And I guess maybe that's why I've kind of like changed my title, my like area of business that I've focused in so many times, because like, I feel like I don't want to just focus on like one thing. It's also a bit of my personality. I change things a lot. I've moved a million times. So it's like, it's just who I am. Last one I'll give you is just as a woman, as a mom, when I went on my first maternity leave, my boss told me, work will be here when you get back. As women, we kind of feel like, oh, you know, like what's going to happen? I'm going to be away for a year or more. And like, how's that going to, you know, how am I going to, you know, adapt? And I'm like, don't worry about it. Work's going to be here, and you'll figure it out when you get back. Don't worry about it. Right. So, yeah.
What great advice. I particularly love that, to go in knowing that you're the highlight of the day. That's an instant confidence boost right there. What's been the most impactful work move you've made?
A lot of the work that I did, you know, when I was at Deloitte, was really, you know, foundational. It was sort of the time in my career where I really brought it all together. It just kind of like, it stitched a lot of what I was doing together. Working at an agency, there's different levels in terms of the depth you begin to understand a client or type of work. at agency level, it was very, I would say, very surface. The work I was doing was very much like, you know, you're doing project-based. It's you're, you know, delivering a landing page experience or something like that. You know, at Deloitte, we started to get more into the, you know, a little bit deeper. I would say we kind of got into the middle where it was really about, you know, understanding the customer, using that information to drive ideas, to, you know, think about like human-centered design and how we apply it across the board. And I really just started to realize that it wasn't just like a big reveal. It was just like, hey, we need to work with our clients. We need to work really closely and understand business problems and understand the customer and then bring that all together to deliver on a solution that is impactful. So I think that that's really where I started to stitch a lot of that together. And now that I work client side, I would say like I'm really in the depths of like understanding of course of like my own client, my own, you know, I would say not my own client, but the company that I work for. It's really about, you know, understanding everything about, you know, the customer, understanding all the data points, understand like, you know, the impact an ad makes to like our site, you know, and everything, you know, end to end. So I'd say that that was kind of like, I guess, the pivotal moment that has led to my growth.
Incredible. The last question, and it's our team favorite one. Is on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you?
I'd say I'm probably a 7 on the weird scale. Maybe that's a little too high. I don't know. Maybe 6 or 7. I see myself as kind of weird. I wouldn't say like I'm totally eccentric, but I do like certain like eccentric things, you know, and so I've always been a bit of like the weird one in my family, you know, like they're like, oh, she's like dyed her hair like a weird color or, you know, done something, you know, strange. So yeah, I try to mix it up. And like I said, I'm not one to just kind of keep, you know, going with the flow. That just makes life boring. So I like to kind of mix things up. And sometimes that means I move to a new place. And sometimes that means like I renovate another house or, you know, it's just like, and people are like, why would you do that? And I'm like, because it's fun. So I guess that's a bit weird. I don't know.
Keeps the creativity alive as well to kind of, yeah, know, just do something different every now and then. Thank you so much for your time and for joining us today. I really found this really insightful, and I really appreciate the insights and the information that you shared. So yeah, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. This is great. I really enjoyed speaking with you today.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.